Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cracked Spines. I'm Sarah.
I'm Cyrus.
And you might tell from the mic quality that we're doing a bit of a throwback to when Cyrus lived in a van and I lived in a house, and we just sort of called each other on the phone.
With one notable difference, one could say.
Not van?
No. I'm in fact...
Where are you?
God's van, Sarah. I'm in a, in fact... 12th century English abbey.
Wow, that's exactly what God calls it.
Yes, I am on a little trip. I am visiting the place where I studied abroad for a semester about 10 years ago with a friend that I studied with for a little reunion.
Oh my God, it was 10 years ago.
It was, yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm so fucking old.
Oh God.
And yeah, you might think that that is, the most surprising new development in my life. But you'd be wrong because I also, wait for it, got COVID for the first time.
I'm impressed. I literally had a COVID patient, like, I've had COVID patients, and I haven't got COVID. So, not to, like, you fucking crushing it. Is that mean? That feels mean. I feel like I'm now making fun of you for having COVID. You stupid idiot.
I wore that goddamn N95 mask for the entire 13-hour trip, and yet. I mean...
You know, you could have caught it somewhere else.
It's true. But I will say, there truly is something about, like... you know, wearing a mask the entire time and then walking around the airport where all of the other people that I was getting together with were, and just being like, ah, so nobody's wearing a mask, so I can kind of see where this is going.
You really kind of see the breakdown in the system here.
I am.
How are you feeling, babe?
Listen, I'm fine. I had very mild symptoms. The only reason that I even tested, because I thought that I was just having allergies, because as you know, I have a dust allergy, and as you might imagine, in an ancient abbey, there's a lot of fucking dust. And there was one point where my pillow fell in between the bed and the wall, and I was like, oh man, I know exactly what's gonna happen when I fish that bad boy out, but I have lost the ability to sleep without sandwiching my head in between two fluffy pillow bread pieces, so I decided, it's probably fine, pulled the pillow out, put it over my head, instantly fell into a 15-minute coughing fit, in which I almost threw up.
Oh my God! Also, it is a 12th century abbey, but it's also like a place where people get rooms to stay. I feel like it shouldn't be that dusty.
Yes, but I'm a sensitive little baby.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about your sensitivities.
Yes. But I'm also very strong, and don't you forget it.
You're so strong, you're so masculine, but you're also so vulnerable, and like there's strength and vulnerability.
Yeah. I'm the peak man. I'm basically Dean Winchester.
Don't say that. He's not the peak man, and you're not him. I won't let you call yourself him.
Yeah, I will say, so I'm feeling fine. It's been almost 5 days now since I tested. It was really weird, like, not being able to taste things, but, like, eating food and being like, I can feel the... physical sensations of taste on my tongue, but it's like there's a disconnect where the taste is supposed to go to my brain. So that was bizarre. But luckily...
And for you, I feel like a hellish experience, because if I had to say, like, what your number one pleasure in life is, I feel like it is eating food, like, good food in cool new locations.
Yes. And then secondary pleasure is smelling good smells, which was also impacted.
Oh,
everything
no.
smelled like fucking cigarette ash. Actually, that's not true. I spent a lot of time trying to exactly categorize what the scent experience was of having COVID. And you know how, like, if you eat a lot of wasabi, it, like, has that weird ashy kind of green taste, and it also just makes your nose feel like it's really burning, and it has like that distinct both physical and like smell sensation in your nose.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Yeah. I don't chug wasabi.
Yeah, well, give it a try sometime. It's just like having COVID, in my opinion. It's been okay, I think. And I am having a really nice time here, and it's been great to reminisce, and it's been great to just walk around making eye contact with a bunch of English sheep. It's been great to envision the farmers watching me staring with deep love and fascination at their sheep, which are presumably just a normal facet of life here. What can I say? I just like animals. Also, sheep are like
weirdly fucked
up.
Sorry that you still experience wonder, you know?
Yeah. The sheep just like look at you. And Sarah, they look at you. I can't explain it any more than that, okay? I haven't spent the requisite amount of time coming up with an intricate mental metaphor for what the gaze of the sheep is to me. But
you know, what it's like when you eat wasabi?
Yes, that's exactly what it's like to stare down a sheep. Because I was weeping.
Meanwhile, ask me how I'm doing.
Hey. Oh, hey, how are you doing back at home? You know, it's probably great. Man, I missed there so much. I'm sure that
I'm a single mother, and my children suck.
Oh, God.
Scurvy
Don't you
and
say
Weevil
that
are
about them.
They suck so badly. You heard me breaking up their fight like 15 minutes ago. It's been that for a week.
I don't think
they're
they did
playing together.
Wrong.
They're having fun together. No, they're doing many things wrong.
No, I don't believe it. They would never.
Well, thank God we finally got an AC. Honestly, the AC unit is what took me because I was like genuinely, you saw my text. I was like, Weevil's gonna kill me.
I know. I was like, do I need to come home early?
Yeah, I was just like, and what it was is because Weevil loves cuddling, and Weevil loves waking you up while you're horizontal, and that sucks so badly when you work night shift, and you can't close the door because it's like infamously hot July, and you don't have AC in the room, so you have to get the cold air from somewhere, so I can't lock her out, you know?
Yeah.
But she just keeps coming in, and then she's like, I'll, like, dissuade her, and then she'll go under my bed and poop in the litter box, and then, like, the heat will bake it, you know? But I have an AC unit in my room now, so it's better.
Thank God.
And I think they have kind of simmered down a little bit. But it's hard. Hey, it's hard living by yourself. I, like, have to do things. Wow, damning. Damning. I should take on more responsibilities when you get home. You're fucking 10,000 plants.
You're nothing without your big, strong mask housewife with an X in there somewhere because gender.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess we could maybe be speaking of, like, partnerships that are really complementary. You know, like, partnerships that, like, are really kind of iconic. Maybe could even support, like, a whole series.
Yeah, partnerships, you know? In which one person is really smart and one person is really dumb and incompetent. No, he's not incompetent. He's very confident. You're competent. He's just also dumb.
Jack Aubrey is competent with boats. End of list.
Yeah. And what more do you need in the Aubrey Maturin series?
There's a part where Jack Aubrey is like, you know, I started telling him I don't like the Catholics in Ireland and doing this thing. And Stephen's like, it was the Protestants who did that. And Jack's like, really? Well, I don't know.
That's so fucking funny.
He's very stupid. All the jokes about him, like, trying and failing to speak Catalan.
Yeah. God.
Because he doesn't even know it's a fucking language.
Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, I would argue that Jack Aubrey is the original himbo.
I mean, I don't know original, but I do think he's a pinnacle of the form.
Who before?
Who before? The books came out in, like, the 80s. There's so many himbos.
They came out in, like, the 60s, okay? 60s to the 80s.
60s to the 80s. You're
Name
fucking forgetting
one himbo
Gilgamesh.
That predates Jack Aubrey. I'll wait.
Hercules.
feelings.
You ever himbo so hard you get drunk and kill your entire family Jesus and have to make it up?
Christ. Yeah, you got me there. That's prototypical himbo behavior. Crazy that Jack Aubrey also does that in book 5.
Crazy. Anything could happen in this series. I read book 1, and I don't think I'm going to progress much further, but I don't know. I'm open to the idea. I'm not going to go any further. I'm done.
Well, here's the thing. I was like, oh, we should do this series because I've been meaning to read a lot more of it. I loved the first one, and then that's as far as I've gotten. And I recently met somebody else who was very passionate about them and encouraged me to also read them. And so I was like, oh, this would be great. I'll read the next few. I'll like get a jump on the rest of the series. We can have a great conversation about it for our beautiful podcast. And hey, mm-hmm. I read one other. I read the second one.
Wow. You only read one book? That's crazy.
I know. I'm so embarrassed. God, I'm like a fake Naval fan.
Well, I don't know. If I can pull the curtain back on like, obviously, there's been some scheduling difficulties because you're in a different country and I work night shift. So, like, we just sort of keep repeating times to each other and keep getting them wrong.
Yeah, like,
you know?
Literally last night when I, like, sat bolt upright and was like, oh god, the podcast! And then you were like, that's tomorrow. Idiot.
Idiot. We delayed this, I don't know, I think, like, a couple times. And now we're finally recording it. Everyone prior to this, I was going to come on and say I did not finish the book because I could not finish the book. But we did successfully, but we kept pushing it back. And I kept being like, well, fuck, I got to keep trying to read this fucking book, you know. So I did. I finished the book. I hit this sort of flow state and I read like 300 pages in one night. And I feel like I got it. You know, like I clicked with the book and I had 100 pages to the end and I put it down to go to bed and then I picked it up again and it was a slog once more.
Oh,
so once you're in that mode, you gotta stay there. Just ride it to the end.
I do actually completely agree with that, though, because I mean, the books are kind of notoriously, I think that I saw somebody describe them as impenetrable, specifically with the maritime terminology, because good God, yeah. Patrick O'Brien loves to just dump some words on you. We literally own an auxiliary text that is called A Sea of Words that is just essentially a like guidebook to understanding the terminology in the series.
Yeah. And every single plank of wood on this fucking ship has a name. And that name has a bunch of apostrophes.
But yeah, I mean, that is honestly one of the selling points of the series, is its deep and intricate historical accuracy when it comes to the late 18th and 19th century naval experiences. It is also 19th
I presume
century.
That's what really got you off, right?
You know it. And I mean, it is like you, at a certain point, like early on, I also experienced a sense of like, wow, I don't have any fucking clue what any of this is. And I am not enjoying the experience of feeling so confused. Although I do think that it helps to have, Stephen Matter in there, who is, also completely fucking baffled by what is happening. There's like that great part where somebody tries to explain things to him and he's basically, in my opinion, the audience proxy in that moment. So I think that like there is, in my opinion, this sense of self-awareness from the author of how obtuse a lot of this is, but also a kind of delight in it. Both
It really revels in specificity.
Absolutely, yeah. It does genuinely to me feel like a person who has done so much research, and rather than being like, and I will use this research to lay a subtle yet distinct background that need not come to the foreground, but will provide a beautiful backdrop for my characters. No, fuck you. Every single boat term that Patrick O'Brien learned, he's gonna jam-pack into these books, goddammit. And you're gonna just be blown backwards by his intelligence.
The fucking 4-pounders are gonna all wheel around on you and set. I can't even, you know? I absorbed none of the boat language. And I think part of the problem was, I found the boat language really, like a barrier to entry. Like, in the same way where it's like, if I had, like, really spicy food and I was like, this is too spicy for me, that doesn't mean the food is bad, yeah. You know? It just means it's not, like, the flavor that I'm wanting to have.
Yeah.
So the boat thing, like, just the sheer amount of naval terminology and descriptions of boats and descriptions of, like, walking around your boat and looking at your boat and climbing up your boat and how's your boat doing? There'd be parts where it's like, okay, so I'll skim this part. And I think that's actually where I think that was where I fucked up. Because genuinely, if you skim the book, even though you're like, this does not seem like an important paragraph, it's jam-packed with so many small asides and observations and turns of phrase that you will just skim past the stuff that is interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It's like there's so many fascinating things that are buried in the specificity, and it does reward you for just digging down into it. That does also mean that it can be a fairly slow read when you're still kind of getting the hang of things. But I think, like you said, when you do get into that state of mind of flow where you're, like, really vibing with it, it's really enjoyable.
Well, I was just gonna say, another thing that really helped me with the book was reading that Patrick O'Brien was like, this is one continuous story that's, like, just chopped into books. But, like, the book isn't, like, this is just, like, how much story is in these pages.
Yeah.
You know? So I stopped waiting for, like, a thing to happen, you know? Like, the thing that the book is about. I stopped, like, waiting for something like that and started being like, this is an episodic.
Yes.
Like, series of adventures.
Also,
once I got into that, that helped a lot.
I'm gonna go ahead and say, I think Tolkien can get away with saying that Lord of the Rings is just one book. You can't fucking say that a 20-book series is one book, Patrick. I'm sorry.
Have you seen you can buy it for $195 on thriftbooks.com. It's the 5-volume edition that has all the books in there. It's like 8,000 pages long.
Holy fuck.
So you can just sort of read your way through that.
Amazing.
So, I don't know, for your consideration.
I do find it funny, you know, in the vein of erudite language. Richard Allard, who edited the early Aubrey Maturin novels, apparently kind of wanted Patrick O'Brien to sort of tone it down a bit.
Begging on his hands and knees. Begging, we don't have to name every sale.
But you do. You simply do. And there's this great quote from him, where he said, about that, like many who have struggled themselves, he thought others should struggle too, which I find very funny.
Struggle I did. So Patrick O'Brien, I feel like I got to experience whatever the fuck you wanted me to.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that overall your experience of the book was positive or negative? Or a secret third thing?
I think this book was a lodestone around my neck for a month, where I could neither advance in it because I, like, just kept bouncing off of it, but couldn't read anything else because this book was a priority. So very similar to the journey I went on with our cats when they don't have a second person to distract them. I went from, like, this is gonna be fine to, oh my god, this sucks. I don't want to do this anymore. And getting like being like, please, I don't want to push the episode back again. Cause if I push the episode back again, I'm going to have to just keep, like, reading the book. To a point where I was just like, there is this genuine sense of satisfaction where it's like, I feel like I clicked in, I got it. I don't, like, again, I don't think I'm gonna necessarily continue the series, but I feel like, I don't know, like, it's like if I went to, like, a convention of, like, model train makers, and it's like, that's not my thing, but I love being here and seeing, like, what you guys are bringing to it. Like I can see it's this beautiful world that is does not for me, but has a lot of stuff that is there that I can marvel at, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think
my... What about you?
Yeah, I think for me, as a boat fucker, I very much enjoy the series. I think what I enjoy more than just the maritime aspects, though, is that I really do like the writing style. You know, yeah, a lot of people
really
do, they
style.
Compare it to, like, Austin and other writers in that kind of time frame, and it feels very historic, and it does feel very vibrant, and it's very funny. Like, there's just so many, like, there's so much texture in these books. And so I find myself once again, basically at the point that I was before, having now read two books and thinking, oh man, yeah, I should really continue the series, but with no idea when that's actually going to happen, because they are difficult to get into. I think once you do, you know, you kind of just got to keep running with it. But when you're not into them, it is difficult.
Because I was genuinely thinking, because I was bouncing, I was reading another thing at this time. I was reading Animorphs, and
oh,
I can't stress to you how fucking wild it is to bounce between a book that I counted, one of the sentences was 128 words long.
Holy shit.
To Animorphs.
That's, yeah, the Animorph books are 128 words long.
I know. At one point, I'm like, in the time that, like, Jack and Steven have become friends, the first book of Animorphs is done.
God.
And it's just like, again, it's like, part of me was like, am I being really intellectually lazy? Am I not, like, putting the work in, you know, to kind of, like, grapple with this sort of denser, but, like, nevertheless well-crafted and fruitful prose? And so that was one of the reasons I really did want to go back in there and, like, give it a good try, because I don't love putting down Master and Commander and being like, all right, time to get back to Animorphs. Animorphs, by the way, fucking rules. It's wild. I'm loving it.
You don't have to tell me that. This book shaped my personality.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, it did. As someone who never read Animorphs and is now reading it, oh my god, yeah. You are its child.
I should have chosen the name Tobias, like I was originally toying with.
Oh, you can't. You mustn't.
I mustn't.
A middle name, perhaps? What the fuck was I gonna say? But while I would say reading the book was a positive experience, while I would say it was rewarding, that I really liked a lot of the characterizations, the ways that he told the story, like, I like a lot about it. I just don't want to read 19 more of them.
Yeah.
You know?
That's completely fair.
It's like, I feel like I could really get into this series, but that's all I would be reading that year.
Yeah, I feel like if you take a break, that's it. Like, you're gonna need to, like, gear back up again to get into the style.
Yeah. Plus, there's so many fucking people on that boat, and I know they're not all important, but good God. Like, I just started being like, that's another guy. He's gonna do something, surely. He'll talk about boats, or he'll get shot. One of those two. I would genuinely like to talk about, like, my favorite thing about the book, though, which is how much of the characterization, how many of the events are actually, like, off-screen, and how much of the characterization is, like, implied and not explicit. Like, something I'm thinking about is, like, this guy has to get his head trepanned, you know? Like, they had to drill a hole into his head, and everyone on Jack's like, my surgeon's going to kill this. Like, Steven's going to kill this man. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's already dying, so who cares? And then it's like, there's the later scene where they're all, like, marveling at, like, how Steven saved him. And as far as I can tell, there's not the scene of the trepanning.
Uh-huh.
There's just the scene, there's just the follow-up where the crew now fucking love Steven.
Yeah.
And there's, like, my favorite part is, like, apparently the crew of the Sophie, the ship that they're on in this book, getting in a fight with a crew from another ship that's, like, of the same class, because they're like, we have a physician on board, we should be higher ranked than you, you guys just have a surgeon. And just the idea of, like, a bunch of sailors being like, that's our guy Steven! He put a hole in his brain and fixed him!
Yeah! Can we also just talk about how fucking great the first scene of the entire series is, which is just...
Oh my god.
Jack Aubrey is very annoying at a concert, and Steven tells him off, and then they're best friends.
If you think about it, though, I mean, it's not dissimilar to how we met.
Explain.
I found you very annoying, but it's for me, it took 6 months for me to get over it.
Wow, crazy. I still find you very annoying.
How dare you? I'm a fucking beautiful, cherished little flower. You miss me so much.
I do miss you so much. You too.
You're gone for so long. If I think about it, I am lost.
I know. And hey, can I just say really quickly, from the bottom of my heart?
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time that you complain about how annoying the cats are being, I want to fucking kill you, okay? I would do anything to have that problem. I miss them so much.
Weevil was so cute today. I laid down on the floor when I got home from work because I was so tired and I was just like, ugh. And then Weevil came over and she, like, rubbed against me and then she stepped on my throat.
Wow, she loves doing that.
She has... I have never met an animal with more disregard for the human body.
Yeah.
Like, scurvy, you couldn't pay scurvy to touch you, yeah. You know? Weevil's like, you're part of the fucking floor, you're part of the couch, I am walking on you, over you, and into you if I can.
Yep. God, I love her so much.
I guess... Hey, should we acknowledge our cat's name is Weevil?
Ah.
And how we fucking got suckered into it?
You know what? That might be the largest impact that doing this podcast episode will have on our household. Hopefully, for many, many years to come.
It's not even in this book. It's in the movie adaptation of the series.
And can I just say, the actual travesty of me not being there in person is that I cannot force you to watch that movie, which fucking rules. It's so good.
Yeah, me and Andrew were talking about watching it. I have seen the movie.
Yeah, but we need to watch it again. Together.
Yeah.
While holding hands.
Okay, I'm down.
And cuddling. I'm down.
I could not. I could not stop imagining Russell Crowe the entire time I was reading.
Good.
I really like Jack Aubrey as a character. I was trying to figure out who he reminded me of, and he reminds me of a character from Discworld, the head of, like, the wizard college, Mustrum Ridcooly. Mustrum Ridcooly. And there's, like, this line he says, which is, like, good point, well made, said Ridcooly, dismissing it instantly.
Yes, yes, that's so Jack Aubrey.
Yeah, or this thing where they're like, his mind is a train, and like a train, it's very difficult to turn it in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great comparison. And I think, because it is like, for all that we make fun of Jack Aubrey, he is not stupid, you know, he is just limited in the applications in which he can excel, but he is quite smart, especially when it comes
to... He is limited in the applications in which he can excel. You shady bitch.
I love him. I love him. I say it with complete love. but really, what he does well, he does exceptionally well. And everything else... he kind of muddles through. And isn't that just relatable to us all?
Oh my god. The scene in Master and Commander where they're back on land and Jack Aubrey is drunk at a party because apparently whenever he's on land, he just like spirals out of control of his life because he only knows how to function on a boat. And there's just a scene of him and Steven at this like party, and like it's one of those unnatural silences that fill the room, and Jack says something along the lines of like, all my sailors are trying to fuck the whores out there. And like everyone turns and like looks, and it's more genteel than that, but like just barely. And then he goes, don't worry, ladies, my sailors are still out there if you're interested. The hostess comes over to Steven, and she's like, hi, get him the fuck out of my house. And Steven's like, yes, yes, I agree.
God. Oh, boy. There's this great scene in Post Captain where, so it is set during the brief period of peace where, and there's like all these political implications of that for the sailors, because as long as there's no longer a war, you can't advance. And if you haven't advanced far enough, then you don't have like the social status to essentially carry you in society. And you're just kind of back where you started. So Steven and Jack are staying in the countryside, and this group of women come to visit them, and they're kind of like, oh, it's like, you know, just a bunch of men here. They're probably going to be like, you know, living horribly and that kind of thing. But everything is like so rigidly like clean, but in a very like sailor specific way where it's like so clear that they've been just treating this house like it's basically a ship, which I found a delightful detail.
That's so charming.
Yeah. And that's the thing. There's just so many little charming things like that, that I think make it really enjoyable. And yeah, I do just really love Jack and Steven's relationship. I think that is what makes this series so popular. Their dynamic is great. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more that I have to even say about it. It's just great.
I think such an important addition to the fact that their first meeting was them disliking each other on sight is that like they didn't, at the end of the concert, stand up and exchange names and addresses so they can fucking duel, which is wild.
Yeah.
And Steven gives the address of a coffee house that he can be found in because he's homeless.
Yeah. God.
And Jack Aubrey later is just like, you're my best friend. We've known each other 10 minutes. Do you want to come on my boat and play cello with me and be my surgeon? And Steven's like, I should really think about this. And then he remembers that he lives outside on the grounds. And he's like, honestly, I'm going to pursue this.
Yep. Jack truly does have the personality of a golden retriever.
There's also, like, small, like, again, this is what I mean. There's, like, so many small, like, moments that I want to talk about where it's just, like, I don't even know if, like, Jack Aubrey knows Steven is broke, you know,
yeah.
He doesn't know the extent of it, but he knows he's broke, and so when he comes on board as a surgeon, Jack's like, here's your wages advanced, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, maybe that's a thing they actually do, like,
seems
but
unlikely.
It comes across as a, it comes across as a characterization moment of, like, a very nice act.
Yeah. And I mean, Jack can be a very hard man, especially in his capacity as a captain. You know, you kind of have to have that level of like discipline and authority. But he can also be like deeply kind. And I think he's certainly never cruel. Like, there's not a cruel bone in this guy's body.
Yeah, he does. I feel like he would commit war crimes, but like,
but who wouldn't
out of
the, you know,
I know, in the Napoleonic, in the fucking
Navy, yeah.
British Navy,
yeah.
Well, I was thinking about, there's actually this moment that was one of the first moments that actually I kind of clicked into the book, because I understood a little bit more how the characterization works and how the author is getting across this information. There's a part where they have had a fight with another boat. Can you tell I internalized none of the language, naval languages. And they win in this fight against the other boat, and the other boats, like, the guy who's in charge of the other boat, the captain, I suppose one might say, except apparently it's not captain, apparently there's, like, lots of different fucking terms. Anyway, the enemy captain's pregnant wife starts giving birth, as a result of the shock of the battle. And, Jack, like, calls Steven out from the sick room, and he's just like, do you hear that, like, screaming? It's like, she's giving birth. And Steven's like, oh, yeah, that sucks. And starts to go back to the sick room, and Jack's like, well, will you help her? And there's, like, this line where it's like, Steven gave him a very odd look and then got his stuff to go over to the other boat. Mm. And it's just, like, thinking, it's like, the odd look is a really interesting... It's, like, it's easy to read a lot of different things into that odd look. I kind of read it as, like, Steven being like, we just killed a lot of people, like, you just waged war on this ship, you know?
Yeah.
And now you're sending me over to, like, give, like, this, like, almost hypocrisy, but honor?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's a
but
great...
But maybe it was Steven being like, honestly, I was reading.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I think that Steven is a great foil for Jack because of the way that Steven has, like, such a different perspective on so many things. And so often that does kind of come to a head with them, of the ways in which Steven is like, hey, this is not right. And a lot of times Steven does push back against some of Jack's, like, behavior, specifically in, like, the kind of maritime capacity. But that's just the way that things are. And at sea, it is, like, a very kind of brutal life. And there is a very strict authority that Steven, I think, sometimes finds unfamiliar and difficult to adapt to. And so provides a kind of interesting counterpoint where you have some things that I think Jack does that Steven sees as kind of barbaric, almost. Mm-hmm. But then also sees the ways in which Jack turns around and is still a very good person at the heart of it. I think it just makes for a very interesting kind of external perspective on Jack.
Yeah. Jack's a very... I don't know. I think I like them both. I think they're very good foils for each other. I think Jack delighted me more often when I was reading some dumb shit he said. He loves his boats. Loves being on a boat.
Don't we all?
And they keep making him go on land.
God.
And not be on a boat. And everyone's just like, boy, this guy loves attacking other boats. And he's like, I do. It's really good.
I do remember when you were reading it and just periodically texting me, like, are they ever going to go to sea?
Oh my God, yeah. That was... the first 100 pages were rough. I actually read a review that said, where someone was like, I don't recommend starting with Master and Commander. I recommend skipping to the next one. Because there's a lot less, like, boat jargon.
Yeah.
And it kind of just hits the ground running more. Whereas this is not a book that hits the ground running. This is a book that, like, wakes up in bed and fucking walks to the racetrack.
Yeah, it, like, and then, wakes like, up page in bed 200. And then goes to the mirror and, like, categorizes its entire appearance YA style.
YA style. Jack being like, they used to call me Goldilocks.
So fucking funny.
Also, the part where there is a gay... The homosexuality in this book is really interesting because they, like, have the recitation of, like, the penal code on the boat, which includes if you commit sodomy with, like, another man, you will be, hanged. Uh-huh. And then there is this, like, character that everyone basically knows is gay and who is openly, more or less, crushing on Jack. And this character goes to Steven, and he's like, Jack should stop leading that guy on. And Steven's like, he's not. He cannot conceive that a man would be attracted. It does not fit his worldview. He simply that's something that happens to other people. Mm-hmm. He has no concept. His understanding of human sexuality is not advanced enough. And then it, like, cuts over to, not quite, but, like, basically just cuts over to Jack's head right after that, where he's interacting with that sailor, and he's like, God, this sailor sure loves finding maps and, like, helping me navigate. What a good sailor.
God.
Oblivion. No fucking idea what's going on.
I love him.
Yes.
I mean, it is actually, like, there's a scene where somebody, I think, do they go to Jack and say, like, hey, there's, like, some impropriety of that nature between these people, and Jack just kind of brushes it off. I'm trying to remember, because I read the second one, so it's been a while since I read the first.
The thing is, like, I don't remember that in the first book, but that could easily be because, like, 10,000 things. Weirdly enough, it's very slow moving, and 10,000 things happen on each page.
Yeah.
Because it's so full of minutia.
Exactly, yeah.
There is a part I do remember where, and I'm so sorry, I wrote down really useless notes for this particular part. So what I just wrote down is part where Jack is like, why'd they report that guy fucked a goat?
Yeah, like, I don't remember that.
Yeah, there's like definitely a guy on the ship who's gonna get hanged because he fucked a goat. Oh, and then Jack's like, well, we have to kill the goat. It's only fair. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know what I like. I don't know. That's my final. I don't know the bestiality ethics. Is it? I feel like it's weird to eat a goat that someone fucked. Mm. But maybe I'm bringing my prudish nature.
Wow, this is like just like Stephen's internal monologue to this happening.
I like Stephen a lot too. I feel like he doesn't have as many he's not as inherently ridiculous, and so there's like fewer moments I point to and quote, but he is genuinely like a guy who is so excited to learn about the world and is perhaps the best surgeon that any of these fucking ships have ever had.
Which might be a low bar, and yet.
It's such a low bar. I could be the best surgeon they've ever had.
Oh, you'd probably be better than Steven, let's be real. You have actual medical training in the modern era. You'd kill it. But unfortunately, you would get very seasick, so that might be a major drawback.
I get so seasick. And also, frankly, my skills are like, yeah, dude, let me assess you with my machines and technology and then go get the medication we've made, you know? Like, I'm not useless on that boat, but I'm sure, like, does anyone have a blood pressure cuff? Like, even a manual blood pressure cuff, just so I can kind of, you know, get a ballpark.
I think you could trepan someone.
I think, you know, I honestly, it means so much to me that you think that.
Yeah. I hope that you might trepan me one day.
I will. Was there anything, was there anything that you want to talk about in Post-Captain that really jumped? Was Post-Captain the second one?
Yeah. One of the main aspects of Post-Captain is that Steven and Jack are kind of competing for the affections of this woman who is like, not actually all that interested in either of them. I really like her. Her name's Diana as a character. She's very interesting and is kind of like, a bit like, I don't know. She's just like having fun, I guess. She's not invested the way that they are. And this causes a lot of drama between them, but like, it never feels all that serious because you never get the sense that like, I mean, you're kind of like, at least for me, I was kind of like, I mean, she's never actually going to end up with either of them. She's just playing.
Hey, buddy.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. What?
Hey, buddy.
What?
I finally, our mutual friend Andrew helped me navigate the library, so I finally have access to research databases again. And why did I get them? It's so I could look up essays about Columbo, yes.
Oh my god.
But I also looked up essays about Patrick O'Brien's series, because I really did want to read, like the thoughts of people who loved it.
Yeah.
And she's in the series so much, apparently.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. She seems to have a real weird relationship with, I won't even tell you which one of them, you know? Because I guess you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, either one seems plausible to me. The relationship is weird with both of them in this.
I'm so sorry. Can we enter a little segment inside of our podcast called What's Peter Falk Been Up To?
Wow. Real quick. This is so shocking. Who could have anticipated this happened? We fell into the Falk zone.
Get Falked? Is that anything?
Oh, I'm...
Falk off?
I think Get Falked is pretty cool. Tell me your Falkings, which is like
It's gonna circle back to this book series, I promise
you. In 15 minutes, but we might have to go about the Aubrey Maturin series again.
Yeah, you know what? Much like the actual books, this is going to be a little discursive, okay? I watched with, again, our mutual friend Andrew, a movie called Mikey and Nikki today. And in it, there is a scene where two, let's say, toxic childhood best friends who are brothers and, like, there's, like, some, like, homoeroticism, but there's also, like, some, like, parental, like, child, like, caregiving. They have a really complicated relationship, where one of them, John Cassavetes, if I said that wrong, I'm so sorry, has uncomfortable sex with his girlfriend while the camera focuses on Peter Falk, who's in the room, wandering in the kitchen, like, and it's just like, John's sex dialogue over Peter Falk, like, smoking a cigarette and, like, looking over at them.
That's wild.
That's what I think the love triangle should be in Post-Captain.
I don't think that Jack or Stephen fuck. I mean, I know they do, but they don't. In general.
I think, the thing is, I know Jack fucks because he, like, gets in trouble for, like, sleeping with an important person's wife.
Yeah, it's true.
You know? And he, like, is, like, constantly being like, I love bosoms, women, and the combination of them with me. But I think Steven fucks better. Like, how can I explain this? Jack seems like he, has sex like they do on sitcoms, where, like, he says, maybe we should take it to the bedroom, and, like, the studio audience goes, ooh!
Yeah.
And then Steven fucks like he's on NPR. Steven fucks like he's on HBO!
Oh, no, I think Steven fucks like he's on NPR. I think you got it right the first time.
That's my hot take. That's my takeaway. Maybe I'll read one of these books a year for the next 20 years, and I'll slowly accumulate opinions.
Yeah, I think that's how to do it. But yeah, I'm glad that we went on this journey. As I go on this literal journey, and as soon as I'm back, we're gonna watch the movie.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. Maybe I'll watch it without you.
No. No.
Maybe I'll watch it with our cat Weevil.
No.
Mm. Is the lesser of two Weevils the last line of the film? No, the last line of the film is a dumb joke about the fucking flightless dodo or whatever.
Yeah, it's just, like, in the middle.
Yeah.
God. Idiots.
Okay, well, I suppose I should let you go, and more specifically, you should fucking let me go.
Yeah, because I have to start my day, and you have to go to bed.
Yeah, it is 2:30 a.m. I have been awake since I worked last night, so I have been awake since 5 p.m. on Sunday, and it is now 2 a.m. on Tuesday.
God, I can't wrap my head. Why didn't you sleep last night?
Because I was working last night.
I can't.
It's now Monday morning.
I can't.
It's now Tuesday morning.
I can't.
It's Tuesday morning. You don't.
I can't.
Do you understand? Hey, listeners, do you understand why we can't schedule it? Why we fucking messed up the scheduling so many times? The night shift 8-hour difference is.
This is cosmic
killer.
Horror to me. I literally can't wrap my head around how this time works. I don't even know
what day is it.
I don't know.
What day is it for you?
It's
what
Tuesday.
Day is it for you?
It's also
Tuesday for me at 2:30 in the morning.
It's so confusing.
And technically, this is like Monday night, if you want to get specific, you know? So, yes, I'm going to go to sleep on Monday night, but I'm really going to sleep on Tuesday morning.
I think the thing that really gets me is that I'm always behind all my other friends. Because I'm on the Pacific Coast, and many of my friends are, like, in the central or east time zones, or even in Europe time zones. So having to now be reversed, I just can't deal with it. I just can't. It's I'm scared, Sarah. I'm so scared. I don't understand.
I mean, not everyone can have the brain to master the night shift scheduling. We're just different. We're built different.
Built different. And I just fuck a lot to a studio audience.
And I fuck on NPR, and they're like, stop. Ira Glass is begging me to get off the air. And I'm like, Ira Glass, I will get off. You know what I think our podcast has been missing? Humor about specific NPR programs.
You're so right. I know that you've just been waiting to dish that out.
I have downloaded the, Fresh Air interview with Peter Falk.
Amazing. That'll be our next bonus episode, I guess.
No, our next bonus episode is going to be me alone monologuing about Columbo. I don't even need you anymore, dude. I'm just pacing back and forth in our apartment.
Why? Because I've been getting really into the old Star Treks lately. We've just been, is this what getting old is? Or do you just go back to, like, shows that were made in, like, the 70s and the 80s, and you're like, man, this was good.
This was it. Back when there was less violence on the TV and fucking a lot of turtlenecks. I've actually been keeping a turtleneck counter.
Amazing.
Of how many turtlenecks I've seen in Columbo. It's a lot.
Have you ever seen Next Gen?
No, I haven't.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess I know what else I'm showing you when I get back. Hope you're ready to watch
all nine fucking seasons or whatever of Next Gen.
No, it's fine. You know, we're not going to do the whole thing, okay? We're just going to watch all the episodes with Q in them.
I should have known you'd love that little fucking guy.
Yeah, of fucking course.
Oh my god. Me being like, you like a little fucking guy who's annoying?
Spider-Man pointing meme. You like a little guy. You like an annoying little guy.
Did you send me a Columbo sticker?
No, I didn't. I don't know where it came from.
Who sent me? I just received a Columbo sticker in the mail. Everyone I've asked has denied it. I feel like I'm going insane. Mom was like, do you think someone on Tumblr sent it to you? I was like, I don't think they should have my home address.
I mean, we did send out those cards at some point. I can't remember if we had our return address on them. I think you're going to have to whip out some Columbo-style deduction in order to solve this mystery.
I'm going to post on Tumblr being like, please, who did this? But I suppose, yes, we should wrap up because the second I go horizontal, I'm going to pass out for 12 hours straight.
I love that for you.
And you have to, like, I don't know, walk the countryside and fucking cough on some sheep or something.
That's exactly what I intend to do.
Yeah, you don't want to give the cat COVID, but you do want to give the sheeps COVID.
They're weird wasabi eyes.
Well, this has been Cracked Spines. Oh my god, I've missed your voice. I mean, obviously we've been, like, in talk, but it's, like, it's nice to sit down and chat with you about a fucking two guys on a boat, you know?
God,
that's what our friendship's about.
That's all that I've ever wanted from you.
Anyway, you can email us at crackspinespodcast@gmail.com. Please send me your headcanons about which NPR show we should all be fucking like. You can find us on Instagram at crackspinespodcast as well. And if you listen to this and you're like, I quite liked that, okay, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/crackspinespodcast.
Wow, you're like, okay, no judgment, I guess, but kind of weird that you like this, you little freak.
It's your money. yeah, it was Patreon. We reached enough goal. I'm reading Animorphs because we had a Patreon goal and we fucking blew past it instantly. So now we have to read all the Animorph books.
Yeah, so if you want us
technically
to...
we don't have any more goals, but we also do have some informal goals of stupid ambitious projects we will do.
Sarah, Supernatural Roulette is not an informal goal. It is a formal goal that will surely happen.
Yeah, it's if we don't have enough backers for it, it'll just be Supernatural Roulette with an actual gun.
That's how you want to go.
I don't. I don't. I'm, hey, hold on. I love a new little guy in a tan coat.
Wow.
That's a Cass reference. Yeah. Did you, yeah? Yeah. Did that come?
I mean, the best part of this is when you're inevitably Columbo for Halloween, you can then do a Castiel cosplay afterwards with little difficulty.
Will you be Dean?
No.
Will you be Dean and I'll be Columbo?
God. God.
There's something there.
I don't think
there's
there is.
There. There's something there. I think about it. Okay. Think about it. Coming this Halloween, Columbo and Castiel. Fuck. God damn it.